Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today we'll talk about the influence of the Newark chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity and how it continues to change the lives of young men in the community.
The scripture says that a good man provides an inheritance for his children's children. So we stand on a great legacy of Alpha Phi Alpha that started in 1906. And we want to create this great legacy moving forward as well.
WBGO's Emily Springer reports on the National Jazz Museum in Harlem.
Offering new voices into the space, I think, is imperative in the continuum of jazz, or just in general, in the art. And the museum, since its founding, has engaged in this.
And I'll chat with Newark Symphony Hall President and CEO Talia Young and DJ Prince Akeem about their love of jazz and excitement over WBGO's 45th birthday celebration. All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Today on the WBGO Journal, we are going to talk and learn much more about the past, present, and future of Alpha Phi Alpha's Alpha Alpha Lambda chapter in Newark, known as the Brick City chapter. Fred Davis is the president of Alpha Phi Alpha's Brick City chapter in Newark. He's also an attorney and CPA. And we're also joined by Leonard Robbins, who is the chair of the Housing Committee and president of the Development Corporation for Alpha Phi Alpha's Alpha Alpha Lambda chapter. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you. I actually appreciate the time.
Exciting times for the fraternity that goes back a long way. A lot of people know about this wonderful fraternity. One of the things that fascinated, though, me, Fred, is how you got started in this fraternity all the way back when. It was an injustice being done after a basketball game. And you probably know I'm a big sports fan. So soon as I saw, you know, something that had to do with sports, I immediately just gravitated to it. Can you tell us about how you got so involved and fired up when it comes, I got to be a part of this?
Personally, yes. What was interesting, so when I was attending Hofstra University, there was an incident at a basketball game. And what particularly happened was that there was a scuffle between an African-American and two individuals who were white. And the African-American was suspended from the school, and the two whites were not. And it appeared that he, at least the African-American, was not the aggressor. So it was very surprising. There was a meeting in one of our big halls at Hofstra, where many of the African-Americans attended. You know, back then, there was an organization called the African People's Organization, which is now called the Black Student Union, but you know, particularly the same thing across the country. You know, we talked about the injustice, what we felt was an injustice. And from that standpoint, I said that never again would I sit on the sidelines, that I would always be involved when I feel that there's been injustice occurring. And then I looked up organizations that were on campus, and one of them happened to be Alpha Phi Alpha. Then it was the Xi, and it continues to be now, the Xi Psi chapter of Alpha Phi Alpha. And when I found out the gentlemen who were in it on the campus and how active they were, and then found out about the founders of the organization, and then those like Thurgood Marshall and Martin Luther King Jr., who were members of the organization, I said, that's the organization for me.
And here we are years later.
Yes.
And now you are the president of this local chapter. Yes. Leonard, I know you went to Syracuse University and also a strong chapter there as well. What were your reasons for getting involved in this fraternity?
When I enrolled at Syracuse, you know, I was one of the, there was a big push, I guess, at that time to bring a number of Blacks into university. And I was accepted into the School of Architecture. And there were a number of us that were starting out in the School of Architecture. But one of the things that I saw on campus was the camaraderie and the brotherhood that I could witness that was taking place amongst the fraternities. And one of them, one of the more preeminent ones on campus was the Alphas, because they were leaders in a number of different campus organizations and held leadership positions. And I was also in a dorm that was that happened to have been populated by a number of brothers from Alpha. So even though I saw that there were a number of other fraternities on campus, the influence that I received from those in my dorm, and also seeing the leadership on campus, was mostly from this same fraternity. So, you know, I gravitated toward that that leadership and that role that they were playing, and also because it gave me a sense of brotherhood that I had not. That I had with my own family out of Philadelphia, you know, because I grew up in a large family.
City of brotherly love. There you go.
Yeah. City of brotherly love. So, but in any event, you know, that's what, and then when you go to, and then when you, as Brother President just mentioned, when you look into the background and you see all the esteemed members, you know, you become enamored with the organization. So that was my attraction, yeah.
Mayor Baraka and several members of the Newark City Council are alphas as well. Fred, when you think about the word brotherhood, it's sometimes overused, but not in this fraternity's case. It truly is a group of individuals who share ideas for a common goal and active. And I know there's a number of exciting projects that you're working on right now. Let's talk about some that you're passionate about.
Yeah, and I want to just briefly address, though, and as I talk about some of the projects and what really drives us for those projects is, like you said, the brotherhood, and so important. And I look back at when our seven founders, what we affectionately call the Jews, got together, and you know, and they realized it was time for a brotherhood, but others didn't think it was that time for a brotherhood. But they knew that it was important to have a close-knit group that was a true brotherhood, that even though we may have different disagreements on certain initiatives, you know, the will of the brotherhood, meaning that the majority will rule, and the brotherhood would get together and make sure that those initiatives still move forward. And that's it was back in 1906 that happened. Back in 1926 when Alpha Alpha Lambda chapter was established in Newark, and to today, we still move forward in on that front. So some of the things that we're really involved in and as part of our national programs is Project Alpha. In fact, last week, on the last Friday, I was at South 17th Street with a few brothers who actually had a financial awareness program for our youth. Phenomenal. I had not seen it put together that way, the way they did. And it was really a phenomenal learning experience for about 20 of our youth at South 17th Street. And we're at others. We're at Lewis A. Spencer School as well. We're in some schools in Montclair. We're, you know, schools in one school in Maplewood Middle School, which will be there on May 31st. So brothers want to help, want to be, you know, the example that these young folks can follow. And I don't care how successful you are in the business world, in government, what have you, our brothers rally around Project Alpha, rally around Go to High School, Go to College, which we just recently created a program for SAT help with the SAT exam. And so we have 11th graders, you know, from the Eagle Academy of Newark, from Weekway High, from Westside High, who have participated in our SAT prep program. It's meaningful. It helps us to really help prepare these young people at any school they want to go to. And, you know, we've had, again, sessions also on Go to High School, Go to College. Some of it is goal setting. And so we actually have a video that brothers participated in a few years ago that we still use that talks about different professions and the goal setting that is necessary to get to that next level. So that's really what drives us. Community service drives us. I mean, brotherhood is always first, but then we take that brotherhood to make it a better community and pour into the community. So those are some of the samples of the programs that we have.
And I'm sure it doesn't hurt when you're talking to young men and you talk about, well, you want to know some of the legendary members of our group? Just happens to be Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Justice Thurgood Marshall, Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, the late New York City Mayor David Dinkins. I mean, when you talk about the integrity of the people, I'm sure their ears perk up. They might not even know everything about these individuals, but the names all of a sudden, it's like, oh, they were a part of this? I think I'm going to listen to Fred and to Leonard a little bit more. Leonard, I know that, you know, as your role, you kind of have a dual role in the fraternity, but the new community center is something that you're passionate about. I wanted to tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Yeah, so this is an idea that that has been generating around the chapter for a number of years, long before I was a member of the organization. They had an idea that they would build a community center for the use of the fraternity to actually enhance the programs that we have, right? So given my background in housing development, real estate, and architecture, when I became chair of the housing committee some five or so years ago, we embarked on the task of actually creating this community center so that we can do this. So 5 years ago in 2019, we put a proposal together that went to the city to purchase the lots and then 2 years later, the city council voted on it and approved it for us to purchase the lots. And then it took us a while to put together all the plans and all the rest to make it happen. But then we presented those plans to the zoning board of approval, and we got those plans approved in October of 22. So it's been a journey, but you know the plans are for us to create this, you know, about a 10,000 square foot community center that have meeting spaces that the community can use for any number of things like, you know, weddings, community meetings, all and it's going to be open to all kinds of nonprofit groups to also actually use the space as well. So and of course our national programs and right. Other programs that we have, because we've got a program in which we work with some entrepreneurs, and one of the entrepreneurs was a young lady who had a business where she was providing Meals on Wheels to seniors, and she's since expanded that business with our help, and she opened up a new place. I think it's in
called 40 Dreams Catering.
40 Dreams Catering.
You know, they provide packaged meals for seniors,
mm-hmm,
all over Essex County, actually.
Now, the reason why I mentioned that is because not only do we work with youth and others, but we work with we have brothers who have all kinds of skills, and they offer those skills up to the community, you know, for building up their businesses. So and that's what the community center will be. Community center will be a place for economic development. It'll be a place for us to engage with the students the way we can't now, with a place where we can to hold our meetings and our sessions. I mean, we have a program in which we do a Martin Luther King oratorical contest. And in that oratorical contest, we're talking about kids that are from 12 to 14 some odd years old who have never spoken in front of a crowd, right? And so giving them that experience of being able to, you know, coach them and mentor them through that process is going to build their self-esteem and catapult them into high school and college with confidence.
We just did our 26th one this past January. And so that's why it's important for us to, again, have our own home, a community center, that we can host that event in our community center for the local kids as well. And it's really important. And one thing I wanted to say also is that, we call ourselves legacy driven, because scripture says that a good man provides an inheritance for his children's children. So we stand on a great legacy of Alpha Phi Alpha that started in 1906. And we want to create this great legacy moving forward as well. And interesting, you named many of our most famous members. But as you also mentioned and started off at, some of our, when Mayor Baraka walks into a classroom, or Councilman Crump and Councilman Kelly walk into a classroom too, they're the modern day heroes. When these young people see them and talk to them, they are truly the modern day heroes as well.
You can see the entire interview with Fred Davis and Leonard Robbins on the WBGO Facebook page. For more information about the fraternity's programs, you can go to brickcityalphas.org. As we approach Jazz Appreciation Month in April, WBGO's Emily Springer highlights a special initiative from a jazz anchor in Harlem.
For over 20 years, the National Jazz Museum in Harlem has been dedicated to preserving jazz history and culture. Yearly, the organization produces over 100 free events, including exhibitions, performances, and educational workshops. With community engagement and amplifying diverse voices in jazz at its core, the museum has been a leader in producing innovative jazz programming. One such program is the Jazz Is Now Curatorial Fellowship. Developed by one of the museum's artistic directors, John Baptiste, and made possible through a grant from the New York Community Trust, the fellowship gives two world-class emerging artists the opportunity to curate, headline, and direct 6 museum events each. Past fellows include Andia Owens, Joel Ross, Genghis Don, and Cleo Reed. Now, entering its third year, the 2024 program fellows have been announced: bassist Leoni Mateo and multi-instrumentalist Luther Allison. Sekou McMiller, the curator of special projects for the museum, oversees the fellowship and functions as a mentor. He shared the value of this initiative for the museum, fellows, and community at large, saying,
"Offering new voices into the space, I think, is imperative in the continuum of jazz, or just in general, in the art. And the museum, since its founding, has engaged in this."
When it comes to helping the fellows develop their ideas, McMiller believes it's important to be as open as possible.
"We like to begin with the idea of possibilities as opposed to restrictions. Open it up as wide as possible, and then begin to tunnel and narrow the vision until we have something more concise. This process allows the fellows to broaden their perspectives, locate their desires, and explore their ideas freely. As artists, they are accustomed to expressing themselves through their music. But what does it mean to express through programming and curation? And what does it truly mean to create an experience? This is the journey that we look forward to taking with this year's new Jazz Is Now Curatorial Fellows."
The 2024 fellows, Leoni Mateo and Luther Allison, are young powerhouse musicians. Mateo is a bassist who has performed across the globe with several artists, including Regina Carter, Jeffrey Keyser, Matthew Whitaker, and Carl Allen. Allison, a multi-instrumentalist specializing in both piano and drum set, leads several of his own bands and has performed with the likes of Samara Joy, Jasmia Horn, and Rodney Whitaker.
"Their applications stuck out, both for their prowess and their musicianship, their scholarship, but also for their passion for community and connecting what they're doing to a greater cause. Their willingness to use themselves and their voice to make things better, to make themselves better."
Community proved to be a major focus of both fellows when discussing their motivations and goals for the program. Allison shared that curation differs from performance in a few key ways.
"It gets me outside of self. A lot of times when I'm performing, I'm kind of just thinking about my own vision, whether it's a band leader or how it is that I can serve the band leader if I'm a side person on the project. Now that I'm able to operate more as a curator in this position, I'm also thinking about how can I serve the community? Because one of the things is, who am I selecting as someone who I feel is a strong representation of the music scene here in New York City, and specifically just the culture of Harlem. And so not only am I trying to serve personal musical beliefs or visions, but even greater than that, I want to try to serve the community. And I feel like that's something that it's probably a way I'm not used to thinking.
For Mateo, her role as a curator works as a model to communicate her personal values and use the space to share her voice.
It really made me more intentional about like the message that I want to send out. When I'm performing, you're thinking about communicating musical ideas that represent musical values like groove or blues or storytelling. But now I'm thinking about what is the personal value behind those musical values and how do I want to communicate that with people? Maybe the year before this one, I went from, I don't think I'm qualified enough to apply to, I think I have something to say now. And I think this curatorial space is allowing that question to be answered. Like, what do I want to say and how do I want to say it? For me, I think a part of my mission statement during this residency will be jazz not existing in a vacuum, and what jazz community means that is not just like people playing it, but like people who are listening to it, people who are painting about it, who are making films about it, even if not necessarily jazz, but the values that jazz have, which is expressing thought and feeling from either a diasporic Black point of view or an American Black point of view, which like all of these different types of art all encompass. And I'm really looking forward to demonstrating that, whether the panels or collaborations with other organizations that I think display those values as well.
Both Mateo and Allison will curate 6 events each for the museum. 2 will focus on their bands, another pair on artists they would like to showcase at the museum, and the final set will be non-musical events like panels and discussions. Mateo is slated to make her curatorial debut at the museum with her quintet on March 21st at 7 p.m. And Allison will debut his voice with his quartet on April 2nd at 7 p.m. Both events are free and open to the public. To RSVP, find more information about all upcoming events at the museum and the Jazz Is Now Curatorial Fellowship, visit the National Jazz Museum in Harlem's website at www.jmih.org. For the WBGO Journal, I'm Emily Springer in Harlem.
WBGO's 45th birthday celebration is set for April 12th at Newark Symphony Hall. And joining us are 2 individuals instrumental to that special evening. Talia Young is the president and CEO of Newark Symphony Hall. Great to see you, Talia.
Pleasure to be here.
And popular DJ, rapper, and producer extraordinaire, Prince Hakeem Bell joins us. Prince, great to see you as well.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And Prince, you'll be part of the celebration as you'll be getting us going on the dance floor when we have the celebration, the party. I know that your dad and Cool and the Gang, your dad, Robert, they started out as the Jazzy Act. So I know there was jazz early on. How has jazz impacted your career?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been listening to you guys the last few weeks, actually, and I heard the promo. As soon as I turned it on, my name popped up. I was like, man, how cool is that? You guys are running promos on the 45th anniversary. But, man, you guys, I just want to say your station, man, is really, really slamming. You know, I've been on and off listening to it for years, but recently really tuned in. And, you know, I always go there when I want to hear, you know, on a dial, you go down the dial, you get to 88.3, I can really hear some music that's really going to uplift me. You know what I mean? But jazz is great. I work with George Benson. One of his albums is, I can't remember the name of the album, but talk about jazz, just to go straight to George Benson, sitting in the studio with him, you know, watching him play that guitar was just incredible, you know? It's like, wow, this guy's like, you know, how he plays and sings at the same time. You know, he is, you say jazz, he's one of the first people that come to mind. But jazz is great. Cool and the Gang's Jazzy Acts. So a lot of their early music was jazz influence heavy, you know, Summer Madness, got a classic jazz tune there, and Jungle Jazz, one of the big samples from them. So jazz, you know, I love jazz.
Talia, you have the beautiful picture of Sarah Vaughan behind you. Sarah Vaughan, one of the wonderful artists that has performed you know, at the legendary Newark Symphony Hall. What a history at that hall.
Look at me. I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree. And I feel like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty just holding your hand.
And when you see that picture behind you, what do you think about?
History, legacy, Newark's voice, Newark's first stage. And I think that's the conversation that we're really excited to put together as a partnership with WBGO and Newark Symphony Hall. It's talking about that legacy of music, of culture that has happened here, you know, in our venue. Saravan specifically, you know, our concert hall is named after her. And this year we're going to be celebrating that 100th anniversary of her life and this contribution she has. So really kind of connecting the story of before, the history of Newark and jazz artists, the history of performers that have come to grace our stage. So we're really excited to be a part of this. And I actually found this old picture in the basement of our box office and pulled it out. And I'm just like, listen, it's going to live here. It's going to inspiration. It's going to have some vibes. But it's really about, you know, connecting what the story is, right? And how it's relatable right now. And I think WBGO does that every day.
It's the perfect venue for this event because you're all about not just preservation and restoration, but you're also about the future of mm-hmm. what's going to happen at Newark Symphony Hall. And that's exciting too. Music is the ultimate connector to everyone from a young age, right? Kids love music. When do you think music first impacted you that you knew you wanted to do it as a career?
Well, you know, I grew up in a music family, so I was always around, you know, then watching my uncle, dad's rehearsing, you know, going on tours with them as a kid during the summer, just being on the stage watching that energy and the crowd react kind of, you know, attracting me to it heavy, you know. Like I said, whole family's either songwriters, producers, you know, musicians, so it's just, you know, it's in the blood.
Tell us about some of the plans that you have for Newark Symphony Hall. You've been well underway doing some amazing things. What's the latest you want to talk about?
So I would say everyone that's going to be attending the anniversary of WBGO will be in the completely newly restored Terrace Ballroom. So we did the ceiling, the roof, the lighting, the bars, everything. It's absolutely beautiful. So we're excited to host you guys there in that newly restored space. We completed phase one, which is a new roof, new boiler systems, and we'll be going into phase two, which is our arts and education lab this summer, which will be restoring 30,000 square feet of arts education space, which is our black box, our dance rooms, individual music study rooms that could also be multi-purpose and programmed. So really excited about that. This summer, more closer to the fall, our marquee will be coming back up on our building. So that is going to be amazing, and the impact that will do on the 7 Broad Street entrance of Newark. So I would say looking at the restoration and the planning, but also the programming. You know, we have very diverse programming that happens here. We have Bollywood in a couple of weeks. We had 3 Palestinian events. We had an Israeli event on a regular basis. We had a Latin jazz night with Newark School of the Arts here 2 weeks ago. Line dancing is still popping once a month. We have a comedy show, and it's just cultural programs. Like, if you can think of anything, it's happening. Know that Newark Symphony is not gone. It is still alive, and there's so much more to come.
I think the whole celebration, the 45th birthday celebration of WBGO, is what both of you are about. You're about connecting people, right? You're about preserving, restoring, celebrating, keeping this music alive, jazz, and everything associated with jazz, because it has branches all over the place. And I want to thank you for both being a part of the celebration and joining us here today on WBGO. Thank you, Talia.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Prince Akeem.
Peace, Doug.
For more information about WBGO's 45th birthday celebration, you can go to WBGO.org. You can also see my entire conversation with Talia Young and DJ Prince Akeem on the WBGO Facebook page. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.